The first in these series of lectures is going to look at what is customs duty. Customs duties are applied to goods that are imported from non-European Union member states into the European Union, or EU for short. Sometimes the EU is called the European Community, and non-EU countries are referred to as third countries. The same rates are charged by all member states as the countries have formed a customs union. Therefore, there is no monetary benefit in importing the goods through France, for example, rather than directly into the UK. At the time of importation, import VAT must also be paid. We will come on to how you calculate customs duty and import VAT in a later lecture. But first, we need to understand which countries make up the EU. The following diagram shows the map of Europe and the 27 countries that are currently in the EU. We have the UK, France, Belgium, Luxembourg, Germany, Ireland, Spain, Portugal, Italy, Denmark, Austria, Greece, the Netherlands, Finland, Sweden, Cyprus, the Czech Republic, Estonia, Hungary, Latvia, Lithuania, Malta, Poland, Slovakia and Slovenia. Bulgaria and Romania were the latest countries to join and did so from the 1st of January 2007. Other countries are currently in negotiations to join the EU. They include Turkey, Croatia, Macedonia and Serbia. You will find a list of the current EU member states in a variety of places in the legislation. The first place you can find them is detailed in Regulation 2 of SI 1995/2518. This regulation is helpful as it also lists the alphabetical codes that are used to denote each member state. If you want to look these up in the legislation now, then press the pause button at the bottom of the screen and then press play to resume once you're ready. The alphabetical code for each member state has now appeared on the diagram. For instance, you will see that the United Kingdom is denoted with GB, Greece is EL, and Austria AT. You can also find a list of each EU member state in Article 3 of EU Regulation 2913 of 92. This regulation is affectionately referred to as the Code. The European Commission has been engaged in a major rewrite of the Code. Some of the reasons for this were to reduce the number of articles by simplifying the rules, provide common rules for different customs regimes where possible, and to resolve problems that had arisen due to the current terminology. The new code has now been written and was published in the Official Journal on the 4th of June 2008. It is contained in Regulation 450 of 2008. However, the substantive provisions require further legislation, known as the implementing provisions, to be written. There is a 5-year timescale within which this must be done. Implementation is scheduled to take place between the 24th of June 2009 and the 24th of June 2013. In the meantime, the original code, Regulation 2913 of 1992, still applies. All references in this CD are to the original code. Whilst we're on the subject of legislation, most of the legislation to do with customs duties is European, and as they are mainly regulations, they are automatically binding on all member states. You will find all of what you need in Tolley's Customs Duties Handbook, or the Red Book for short. You will find information about this book on the title page to this CD-ROM. As well as the code, another important piece of legislation is Regulation 2454 of 93, also known as the Implementing Regulations. The code contains the basic law relating to customs duties, and the implementing regulations contain the more detailed procedural requirements. As mentioned already, the new code has been written, but needs implementing legislation to give legal effect to most of its provisions. The new implementing provisions, once written, will repeal the current implementing regulations 2454 of 1993. All references in this CD are to the current implementing regulations 2454 of 1993. One final bit of legislation that you will want to become familiar with is the Customs and Excise Management Act of 1979, or CEMA for short. This legislation, although not European, provides the administrative rules for importing into the UK, such as the powers that Her Majesty's Revenue and Customs have in respect of importations and criminal offences. Throughout these lectures,
we'll refer to Her Majesty's Revenue and Customs as Customs. This piece of legislation is also reproduced in the Tolley's Red Book. As we go through the rest of the lectures, I will introduce you to other important legislation. We've already mentioned that customs duties are EU-wide. Therefore, once the goods have been imported into any one of the member states, they are deemed to be in free circulation.
This means that the goods are free to move around the territory of the EU member states without any further customs duty implications. Territory simply means the area in which the customs rules are applied. Goods that originate in the EU member states are also able to move freely. Goods that have been released to free circulation and EU originating goods are often referred to as community goods.
However, a word of warning at this stage. Although customs duties are EU-wide, VAT and excise duties are specific to each member state.
You will learn more about these in later lectures. Also, unlike its sister tax, VAT, customs duties are irrecoverable. Therefore, by minimizing any customs duty due, we can increase the final profits of the importer. One of the aims of EU law is to protect EU industry and regulate trade. One way of doing this is by imposing an indirect tax or customs duty on non-EU produced goods. Note that it is only goods that are charged with duty, not services. So how are goods imported? Well, we will take the UK as an example. When goods arrive at the seaport or airport, they must be declared to customs, in accordance with Articles 38 and 40 of the Code. The declaration to customs is usually done through submission of a single administrative document, or SAD for short. Sometimes this is called a C88, or a customs declaration, or an import entry. Annex 31 of the implementing regulations shows an example of a C88. We'll have a look at one on the screen now. Historically, the C88 was a paper document which was physically completed when the goods were imported. The information on the C88 was subsequently input into customs computer system. These days, the majority of declarations are completed and filed electronically. However, unless the importer is authorized to use simplified procedures, which you will learn about in a later lecture, a lot of information is required at the time of import. Also, from the 1st of January 2011, the new Import Control System, or ICS for short, is taking effect, which will require traders to submit pre-arrival information about the goods that they are intending to import. This will enable the authorities to carry out risk analysis on the impending import. This is the first phase of the EU-wide Automated Import System, or AIS. The C88 comes in an 8-part set, but only certain copies are needed, depending on the type of import being made. It asks for a variety of information, and although there are 68 boxes on the declaration, not all of them need to be completed. We'll look at a few of the most important ones. These include: a description of the goods needs to be inserted in box 31. This can help to identify any specific rules that need to be complied with, for example, whether the goods might need an import license. The country of origin of the goods is inserted in box 16. This is important, as it can help to determine the rate of duty applicable to the goods. Something called the commodity code is required in box 33. This is also sometimes called the classification code, CN code, or CCN. This determines primarily what rate of customs duty is going to be due on the goods. Goods are classified in a big book called the Tariff, where there are approximately 150,000 codes. Therefore, it is vital that the code given to the goods is correct. The codes are usually 10 digits in length, but can be more, especially if agricultural goods are being imported. The classification code determines the following: the duty rate, the import VAT rate, any excise duties that may be applicable to the goods, whether the goods are liable to anti-dumping duty, or ADD for short, any license that may be required, or preferential duty rates that may be available. You will learn more about these topics in later lectures. Also, remember what we have already said. that import VAT and excise duty rates are member state specific. The others listed are EU-wide. We also have to fill in a CPC code on the C88 in box 37. This stands for Customs Procedure Code. It tells customs what we are doing with our goods. For instance, are we importing them to free circulation? Or are we importing them to a different customs regime or procedure? You will learn more about the types of regimes and procedures in later lectures and why you might use them. Box 54 is considered by some to be the most important box. This tells customs who is declaring the goods to them and who therefore is liable for any duties due on the goods. Let's look at this in more detail. Usually, an importer uses a freight forwarder to import his goods on his behalf. This means the importer does not have to keep running to the port every time goods arrive and declare them to customs himself. The freight forwarder is an agent acting on behalf of the importer. However, this agent can act for the importer and sign the declaration in one of two ways. He could be an indirect representative of the importer. This means that the importer and the freight forwarder are jointly and severally liable for any customs duties. In this case, customs could pursue either of them for unpaid duties. Otherwise, the freight forwarder acts as a direct representative of the importer, which means he is acting under the importer's direct instruction, and the declarant and person liable for any duties is the importer. Consequently, most, if not all, freight agents will act as direct representatives. As well as the C88 or customs declaration, other documents are usually required at the time of import. The main ones are a valuation declaration. See the valuation lecture for more details on this, because sometimes one of these is not required. An invoice for the goods and, where appropriate, an import license and certificate of origin. In later chapters, you will learn more about why these documents are needed. Once the goods have been declared to customs, the duty needs to be paid or secured before they will release the goods into free circulation. On acceptance of the declaration, customs will issue an E2, which is an entry acceptance advice slip. This is generated by customs computer called CHIEF, which stands for Customs Handling of Import and Export Freight. Customs require customs duties to be paid or secured before they will release the goods. So that a trader does not have to hand over cash every time he imports goods, customs will allow him to use other methods of paying the duty. Perhaps the most important of these is the duty deferment scheme. To use this, an importer must be authorized. To obtain authorization, he needs to complete a variety of forms and send them to customs. Once authorized, customs will issue the importer with a deferment approval number, or DAN for short, which needs quoting on each import declaration. To become authorized, the importer needs a recognized bank guarantee or equivalent from an insurance company so that in the event that the importer can't pay, customs will still get their money. The guarantee needs to cover all charges that an importer wishes to defer in a calendar month. Traders may be able to use a duty deferment account without providing a guarantee for import VAT due. A guarantee is still required for the customs duty. This is where they are authorized under the SIVA scheme. This stands for Simplified Import VAT Accounting. Application is made to customs, who will apply certain criteria to see whether the trader qualifies to operate a reduced security. How you use the duty deferment scheme is as follows. Let's imagine that you have a guarantee to cover charges of £100,000 each month. You import goods in January, and the charges due are exactly the amount of your guarantee, that is, £100,000. The freight agent quotes his principal's duty deferment approval number, or DAN, on the customs declaration C88. Customs will now release the goods as the charges due have been secured. On the 15th day of the next month, that is February, customs will take the £100,000 due directly from the importer's bank account. If the trader does not have enough funds, then customs will invoke the guarantee. Note that the guaranteed £100,000 is available for every calendar month. This means, technically, that the guarantor could be liable at any time for double the amount of the guarantee. For instance, if in the first week of February you import goods with charges of £100,000, you haven't exceeded your guarantee for the month, so customs will release the goods. However, by the time customs try to take the direct debit on the 15th of February for January's charges, £200,000 is outstanding and may be claimed ultimately from the guarantor if the importer fails to pay. There are a number of advantages to using duty deferment. One advantage is a speedier clearance of the goods. Customs don't have to wait for you to physically pay, so as soon as Chief recognizes the duty deferment approval number on the C88, the goods will be released. There is also a reduction in administration, as there is only one monthly payment of duties and VAT. Finally, the importer will obtain a cash flow benefit by receiving up to 45 days of credit. I.e., if he imports on the 1st of January, the duty on those goods will not be paid until the 15th of February. Deferment statements are usually sent to an importer on a weekly basis, so they can establish if they are about to exceed their guaranteed limit. If they exceed their limit, Chief will not allow the goods to be released to their deferment account, and the importer will have to pay the charges in another way. The monthly import VAT certificate, the C79, will be sent to the VAT registered address of the importer on or about the 12th of the month. This is needed so that the importer can recover the VAT as input tax. The duty deferment statement itself cannot be used to support input VAT deductions. Our next look in this lecture is at authorized economic operators, or AEOs for short. From January 2008, an amendment to the Code, Regulation 2913 of 1992, took effect to allow a person to become an AEO. Being an AEO allows an importer certain simplifications under customs legislation. For example, he should be able to obtain speedier clearance of his goods. The relevant legislation is contained in Article 5A onwards of the Code and Article 14A onwards of the implementing regulations. To become an AEO, an application has to be made to Customs, and they will grant a certificate. There are three types of AEO certificates. One allows them to benefit from simplifications under Customs rules. The second one allows them to benefit from facilitations of Customs controls relating to security and safety of goods, and the third one allows both of the above simplifications. Depending on which certificate the importer wants, they might have to demonstrate all or some of the following. 1. An appropriate record of compliance with customs requirements. 2. A satisfactory system of managing commercial and, where appropriate, transport records, which allows appropriate customs controls. 3. Appropriate financial solvency. And 4. Appropriate security and safety standards. Once customs receive the application, they must communicate it to the other member states within 5 working days. The other member states then have 35 calendar days to communicate any relevant information to customs that might prejudice the granting of the certificate. Where a certificate is issued, it must correspond with the model contained in Annex 1D of the implementing regulations. It must be issued within 90 calendar days, starting with the date of receipt. This period can be extended by 30 days. The certificate takes effect on the 10th working day after its issue. It is recognised in all member states. There is no period of validity attaching to it. Certificates can be suspended or revoked by the authorities in certain situations. Customs authorities across the EU have been finding that the authorisation process is generally taking longer than 90 days. From the 1st of January 2010, the period for issuing a certificate or rejecting an application has been extended to 120 days, with a further extension allowed of up to 60 days. Make sure that you look through Articles 14A to 14X in your Tolly Red Book and become familiar with the rules on AEOs. Remember, you can highlight your legislation, and if a detailed question were to appear on this in the exam, the information will be in front of you. We'll now take a look at the Economic Operator Registration and Identification Scheme, or EORI for short. This scheme commenced across the EU on the 1st of July 2009 and replaced the current TURN system. Each importer is assigned a unique number which is valid throughout the EU. It is quoted on various documents such as the customs declaration, and one of its uses is for the exchange of information between the customs authorities. The number is still essentially the same as that used under the old TURN system, i.e. the letters GB are followed by the trader's VAT registration number plus a three-digit suffix. Most traders were automatically transferred over to the new system, but new businesses need to apply for a number, which can be done at the same time as their application for VAT registration.
To see what you have learned so far, have a go at the following examples. For examples 1 and 2, you need to type an X in the box, showing whether the statement is true or false. For examples 3 to 5, you need to fill in the blanks with the correct words, numbers, or letters. Once you are happy with your choices, then press the Enter key at the bottom of the page.